Welcome everyone to episode 441 of Signals from Mars. I'm your host Victor, and for this episode I bring you an interview with Darren, the main person and bass player behind the band Greyhawk. They have just released the album Warriors of Greyhawk, and this one's for all those people that say there's no good new music coming out.
I'm ready.
Let's do it!
Quick reminder that in addition to hosting Signals from Mars, I've also worked behind the scenes helping other podcasters. With over 16 years of experience and more than 1,200 episodes that I've produced or appeared on, I offer podcasting editing, ghost hosting interviews, and repurposing content into viral clips, show notes, transcripts, and social media posts. If you've got a podcast and need help making it sound professional, or if you want to turn your episodes into content that actually grows your audience, I can help. Check out the podcasting services page over at signalsfrommars.com. Just go all the way to the right on the menu. You'll see work with me, hover over that, and you'll see podcast services and sponsorship. Let me help you make your podcast stand out. Speaking of sponsorships, Signals from Mars is sponsored by listeners like you and also by great sponsors. If you've got a brand, product, or service that connects with rock and metal fans, I'd love to work with you. Our audience isn't casual. They're collectors, concert goers, and gear buyers who support the bands and brands they love. Sponsorship packages start at just $150 a month and include on-air mentions, social media plugs, and even product features. If you want to connect with a loyal rock and metal audience, head on over to the sponsorship page on signalsfrommars.com to learn more. So we recently had the Grammys, and I know that there's a lot of people that don't care for the Grammys. I mean, I don't get bent out of shape over who wins or who doesn't win. I'm glad that that music that we love is being represented, and I'll actually take that back. I don't understand why Turnstile won a Grammy this year, being that that album, most of it, sounds like an 80s synthwave album. It doesn't sound like metal at all, but whatever. I get it. There's parts of what they do that's hardcore, that's more metal themed than it has been in the past. And I don't know if this is like a case in a sport where a foul isn't called, and then on the minimal thing, on the next play, they reward the team that should have gotten that foul. So I don't know if that's years later because maybe they should have been nominated and should have won a previous year. They're giving that to them now. What I was trying to mention is that people are bent out of shape when it was brought up, hey, we finally had a metal performance again this year because we had Spirit Box doing Soft Spine, which I thought was great. That's one of my favorite songs, tracks that came out last year. And that right away, see, that's not my kind of metal, because we've got purists that instead of being happy that we're being represented and saying, well, you know, that's not my favorite band, but it's cool that there's a metal act actually up there playing. You know, we're finally getting bands back up there. So maybe next year, they'll have a band that's more to my liking. What I'm getting at is that metal, the metal community is so split, is so divided, and that when one person props something up, there's always somebody else to kind of shoot it down. Greyhawk has put out a great album, Warriors of Greyhawk.
I'm still going to have people that say, well, there's nothing new that's good that's coming out. Bullshit. This is your perfect example of a good classic heavy metal sounding album that you can get into. Look, I'm not saying this is going to replace Peace of Mind by Iron Maiden or anything like that in your playlist. I'm saying that this could comfortably go alongside albums and bands that you love in those playlists where if you like Unleash the Archers, Greyhawk isn't that much of a stretch. If you like Halloween, this isn't that much of a stretch. If you like Maiden, this isn't that much of a stretch. Listen to the interview with Darren. If you like what you hear, check out the album on streaming. And after that, if you like it, buy the thing and support the band. All right? Welcome, everyone, to the latest episode of Signals from Mars. I'm your host, Victor, and joining me today is Darren from the band Greyhawk. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Victor. How are you, man?
Doing good as well. So one of the things that really jumped out at me about the band was how prolific you guys are with releasing material. Since 2018, you guys have released either an album or an EP more or less every 2 years. When you guys start to write material, is it for a specific album or EP, or do you guys just always write and stockpile things?
That's a good question. It's a little bit of both, I would say. Generally speaking, I mean, our first EP, Ride Out, that was our first songs, basically. We'd gotten together and written a bunch of songs and, you know, didn't have a record deal or anything. And I'm a firm believer that if you're going to go out and play live, you should have something to either sell or hand people. Otherwise, they're going to completely forget about the band they saw that they never heard of at that bar that night. I mean, it's those guys that played those songs. What are they called again? I don't know. They didn't have a CD. So that's where that one came from. And generally speaking, our EPs are usually B-sides or kind of like leftover tracks that we thought were cool, but they didn't quite make a full length. But yeah, when we write and we're sitting down to say, okay, we're going to make some new material, we've got some ideas, there's generally a full length concept in mind.
Okay. When writing this album, how much did having a new singer in Anthony Corso affect how you guys were writing these songs?
Very much so. If anyone's familiar with the band, you know, we've had our old singer, Rev Taylor, was our singer from day one until 2024 when he left the band. Rev was very much a baritone operatic singer. We had Anthony come along, who is not that. You know, Anthony is very much, you know, your Bruce Dickinson, higher register, Michael Kiske, power metal voice. So that I personally believe that most individuals, when they listen to music, they hear the vocals first. I mean, that's kind of the first thing that people are going to use as their judgment point of, do I like this or do I not? So I personally think if you're writing melodic music and you're not tailoring your music to your singer's abilities, then you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot a little bit. So it was tricky because the idea was we had to pivot to suit Anthony's voice, but we didn't want to pivot too far where we're not being true to what the band is and, you know, all the people that have been loyal to us over the years and bought our records. So, you know, we appreciate our fans and our fan base and the people who have gotten us all over the world, you know, and flown and traveled to see us and whatever. So we don't want to make everyone mad, right? But, you know, you definitely have to think about the style of music you're writing and the keys you're writing the songs in. They have to be in your singer's capabilities.
Gotcha. And was Anthony your first choice, or do you guys have to do a search to come upon the right guy?
A little bit of both, man. I would say we put a search out there to say open auditions. You know, Greyhawks needs a singer. He was the first guy. Cool. I put, and you know, they always say it's never the first guy. Well, I will say sometimes it is, you know, because we put the ad up, I think, on a Tuesday. He got a hold of me on a Wednesday, and he had an audition in my inbox on a Friday. So it was, you know, it was a combination of, well, first of all, wow, this guy's works. He's a worker. He grinds. He's prolific. He knows what he's doing. But also has a great voice. And I kind of was like, hey guys, like, I know this is the first guy, but we got to take a serious look at this dude. And, you know, we kind of like put him in the let's have him audition box and said, okay, well, we'll give people some time because you never know, you know, right. maybe Rob Halford quits Judas Priest next week and decides he needs a new gig, right? So you want to, people are working on the song, so you want to give them some time. But, you know, I think like 2 weeks in, we're like, okay, let's have this guy out to sing live because our audition was, hey, send us a tape, right? It's very important in 2025, 26 that you can record your own stuff in this and work on your own stuff at home. So let's have this guy out to sing. And we asked him to learn four songs and he looked up our live set lists and learned the entire set and came to practice with like 10 songs ready. And it was like, this is just undeniable. So let's just not waste this guy's time or anyone else's and hire them. So yeah, it was the first guy. If it was an open search, but yeah, he was the first choice.
Okay. And outside of writing for him and trying to leverage his skills, what else was kind of the plan of action that you guys wanted when writing and recording Warriors of Greyhawk?
Wow, that's a very good question too. So Anthony came with a great set of skills that we didn't know that he had. Okay. It turns out he is part of the Nail the Mix crew. Like he's really heavily involved in those guys and he's a very skilled audio engineer. You know, he mixed and mastered lots of things. And we actually recorded the entire album with him in his home studio. Wow. And now when I say home studio, I have a home studio behind me. I have like two monitors and a Scarlett input thing. That's my home studio. Anthony has like a studio, you know, with mixing boards and a drum room and all this other stuff. And he's recorded many bands in there. So we tracked everything with him. And then we sent it off to Henrik Ood, who's quite a big shot, you know, mix and master guy over in Sweden. And he took care of that end. But yeah, I mean, for me, I was looking for somebody who can work efficiently, you know, I don't have to babysit. You know, I'm in my 40s now. I've done enough of, you know, babysitting musicians in my 20s and 30s. So you know, I wanted somebody who can be responsible and handle their business. And yeah, he's been an absolute dynamite addition to this group, not just in his singing abilities, but in what he can do behind the scenes. And it's just, he also has like, he's not an egomaniac. He's really chill. He doesn't have lead singer disease for the most part. And, you know, I don't want to give him too much credit. But yeah, he's a great guy to work with. So we couldn't be happier.
Okay. So who officially produced the album? Because in the press release, it said that Henrik did the production.
Yeah. So he basically, I guess that it depends on how you define that word, which is kind of a loosely thrown around word in the music industry. So Anthony engineered it. So we tracked drums, guitars, bass, vocals, keyboards, orchestration was all done here at his studio. We edited all the tracks here and we got everything in a nice package. Then we sent that off to Henrik and Henrik did the mixing and mastering. So he took care of all that, as I guess you would call that post-production work. So okay. That was all Henrik. And, you know, that's like, he's a guy who's just, I mean, he's done Stryker, Hammerfall, Architects, like you name it, like so many Powerwolf, like so many cool bands he's worked with over the years. So yeah, if there's any musicians listening, like Henrik Ood Recordings in Sweden is a guy you should talk to if you want your albums to sound awesome.
Okay. So, and that's interesting because back in the day, the engineer was the producer. I mean, there are so many documentaries that are out there available that they say, well, producer didn't actually, that word didn't start getting thrown around until like the early 80s. The engineer is who kind of did all that.
Or he was a guy who had an engineer in the room with them. And I would love to make a record like that one day. Cause I know like all my favorites, like all my favorite Maiden and Priest and Dio and records and stuff had a guy who was the producer who was working from the band from the demo phase all the way up to the end, you know, working with them on making the music. And I think that would be a cool process to have somebody who is just really knowledgeable, you know, saying, hey, maybe you should shorten this up. Maybe you should change this riff here. It'd be interesting to do that. It would be probably difficult in some ways, having someone be like, no, but it would be cool to like hear people's expertise and different takes. Cause as a musician nowadays, most bands don't do that. So you can kind of run the risk of getting stuck in an echo chamber of just kind of doing whatever you want, whether you should or not.
Right. Yeah. So in other words, you want to find your Martin Birch.
That would be awesome, man. Like I would love to do that one day. That would be really cool. But I think it has to be somebody that's a really special skill. I think that those guys have, where they can have the trust of a band to take their music and their art and, you know, kind of mold it and have them almost be like an additional member of the band for a period of time. That takes a really kind of special individual to be able to do that effectively, I think.
Right. On the flip side though, if you guys are engineering it internally, you guys are essentially doing all the quality checks as far as, you know, there's also a thin line there as well to know when you need to say, you know what, that really wasn't that good. Maybe we need to, is it difficult for you guys to decide, you know what, we need to work on that more, or that isn't as good as what we initially thought it would be?
I mean, I think that generally, I mean, everybody here is pretty, egos are not really a thing in this band, which is amazing. And everybody is definitely about the cause, but I'm kind of the guy who has, for lack of a better term, has to be a dick sometimes, you know, like sometimes I'm just like, this is, and I'm never like, this sucks, you know, do this again. It's more like, hey, I don't think we should do A, B, or C, or I don't think this really cuts the mustard because of A, B, or C. But when it came down to things like track selection, that's very much a group effort. Okay. For this one, we demoed about 20 songs, 20, 25 songs, I think. And we all kind of sat down at my house and we just listened to all of them. And we debated and we talked and we went back and forth and, you know, it took all night. Like, we basically were there all night. And we just basically narrowed it down to the group of songs that you see there on the record. So yeah, it was it's always a process, and it is difficult because everybody gets attached to certain songs. Right. You know, everyone in Greyhawk will be like, I'm not attached to this song, but they are. You know, like they are. So it comes down to a lot of debate, but sometimes a lot of times I wound up being the guy. But you know, I run my own company on the side, so I'm used to having to manage people. So it's kind of part of my skill set.
Gotcha. Okay. Is there anything that turned out better than what you had expected before shipping the album off to Henrik, or even after when hearing the mixes?
I mean, there's a song on the record called Hyperspace that, you know, I was not as high on when we finished it, but when we got it back, I was like, oh man, this is actually a really cool song. And there's a lot of, when Anthony tracked his vocals, there was a lot of surprises for me. Like there's a certain note in a song called Rise Above where he kind of hits this really almost desperate sounding raspy scream that I was like, oh wow, like never heard you make that noise before. Right. But yeah, I mean, with Henrik, we kind of, he was an intentional pick. He did our last album Thunderheart as well. And what I did with that one is I basically cherry picked 15 or 16 albums in our genre by bands who, I mean, not by like made, like, because a lot of times, you know, the producers will say like, hey, everybody pick three of their favorite albums. Everyone's like Heaven and Hell by Sabbath, you know, or Somewhere in Time by Iron Maiden. And it's like, okay, those are masterpieces from 40 years ago, not necessarily so applicable today. So I basically picked like 15 or 20 albums from now who were done by our contemporaries, you know, bands like, you know, Unto Others and Eternal Champion and go down the line and just pick. It was a wide variety, but everybody landed on the album Play to Win by Stryker, which was one of the ones I picked. And I think that Stryker are one of, if not the best band on like the indie trad metal circuit. And they have been for 20 years. And I love that record. And everybody basically was like, this guy, we all like this one. So we basically went to Henrik and said, hey, this is our reference point. It's an album you made. We'd like you to take this kind of treatment and then give it to our album. So that's another thing I felt was a very intentional move. Like, everybody kind of, let's pick an album that we all agree we like what this sounds like. It's new. Here's the guy that did it. Let's ask the guy that did it to do it, because he knows how it's done, right? He made the sausage. He knows how the sausage is made.
Yeah. Makes sense. As a bass player, is there anything that you tried differently outside of just the overall sound that we're talking about? Is there anything in your playing that you did differently? Is there anything from a gear standpoint that you use differently on this album?
Definitely. This one I used, I used a very nice high-end Spectre bass that Spectre made for me. It's a beautiful, beautiful piece of gear. It's actually right behind me. This is my custom Spectre bass. It's made out of old growth redwood, nice quilted maple top, abalone inlays. It costs a lot of money probably, but they hooked me up with it, so I don't know. But it sounds like $1 million. So that was one of them. The other one was I used Dark Less electronics to get my tone. Henrik, of course, reamped it and added a bunch of EQ and messed with it. So gear wise, that was definitely a change for me to use some really nice high end Spectre gear. You know, plug for my guys in Spectre. I love them so much. I got their tattoo. But playing wise, Anthony really pushed me in the studio to try some different things. Try a fill here or there, try this here or there. He's like, there's one part in Warriors of Greyhawk where there's this, you know, really cool tapping arpeggiated part. He's like, you're good at tapping, try something there. And there's one song in particular that our guitar player Rob Steinway wrote called The Endless Race. And it's a song he wrote for a band him and me used to be in called Skeletor. And okay. I know that song meant a lot to him. And I really wanted to come up to honor the original demo, which the original demo was made had a bass player called a bass player who is a much better bass player than me. So there were some pretty crazy bass lines like originally arranged for it. And I really wanted to honor the original arrangement. So I really had to push myself on that one. If you listen to The Endless Race, the bass on that is really, really wacky. So, but I'm very proud of how it came out, and now I have to play it live. So we'll see how that goes.
Okay. And the cover of Warriors of Greyhawk, was worked on by Daniel Porta. How obviously you guys, I'm assuming, had a ton of input on that. What was the original idea behind it? And then ultimately, how difficult was it to get to the vision that you guys wanted for the cover?
So when I do album covers, I basically try to make things. I view the album cover, one is obviously a piece of art, but I also view it as an advertising piece. So I try to make album covers that stand out, that if you see it on a screen, if you see it on a rack in a record store, and you go, I need to know what that sounds like, because that looks insane. So basically our inspiration was old Dungeons and Dragons books, or 90s like RPG games, that kind of stuff. Because we're really trying to harken back to some of the power metal from that time. Back in the 90s and 2000s, that's my favorite power metal. So we kind of wanted something that was a little retro in that way. And the idea was to kind of have all the band members in like a D&D party with a big wizard behind us. It came together pretty quick. Once we started just kind of having a little fun with it and like laughing, you know, having a good time, like coming up with this thing that we wanted to make that was over the top and, you know, kind of crazy looking. And Daniel did, I'm in another band called Glyph. And Daniel did the artwork for our last EP called Invictus. And I really liked it. And he was really easy to work with. He seemed to understand assignments really quick. He didn't really have any trouble visualizing what the band wants. Like when you give him an idea, he can kind of spin it and start sketching it right away. So he's really easy to work with. And his Instagram handle, just plug him real quick. He's at the Pit Forge. So if any bands are looking for quality artwork, hit him up. He does a lot of great stuff for a lot of bands. But yeah, that was kind of just it. Like if you look at the album cover, Keepers of the Flame, which is our debut, it's kind of ugly in some ways, but it's really like eye catching, right? Like that's kind of my idea for album covers, is always to make them be eye catching. Like I love Riot's album covers, even though they're hideous, but like the steel makes you go, oh, I need to know what's going on here. Right.
Yeah, I get that. We've had many a discussion on Riot album covers. So
yeah, for sure. I saw a vinyl version of Naruto in the wild the other day, and I was showing a friend of mine who's not a metalhead this cover, and I was like, you know, this probably looks like shit to you, but to me, this is gorgeous.
So the album is coming out on CD, vinyl, and cassette.
Yeah.
How closely did you work with your label on getting the album out on all those formats?
Very closely. Cruz del Sur is one of my favorite labels, and has been for a long time. I've known about Cruz del Sur. Actually first hit my radar in the 2000s when I was playing shows up in Vancouver, BC, Canada. I was playing with a band called Antiquis, who were signed to Cruz at the time. And okay. I was like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't know too many bands back then who were on a label, let alone a European label. So I, of course, started following them. And I found bands like Slaufeg and countless other underground bands at the time. So I always wanted to, I was like, man, I'd love to get an album out on that label one day. So we tried a couple times. The timing just wasn't right. And then we wind up meeting Enrico at Keep It True Festival in Germany in 2024 when we played there. And we just hit it off with him. He's a great guy. He's really smart. He's funny. He's personable. He's one of the best guys in the, there's a lot of really good people in like the new traditional metal scene. And he's one of the tops, and he's just a really good guy. So yeah, when we agreed to do this album, you know, we kind of talked about certain things, and I was like, yeah, like these, people love cassettes. I don't understand it, but they love them. I remember when I was a kid getting cassettes as CDs came out, I was like, oh man, you mean I don't have to press rewind and fast forward to get to the song I want to hear? I'm right. A happy man. But some people seem to love them. And, you know, I get the nostalgia. I think it's very cool having, I have a cassette. We had Thunderheart and Keepers of the Flame come out on cassette. And I still have one of each on, you know, in my collection, and I love having them, and I never had a problem selling them at all. It's crazy. But I do now find that CDs are resurging. Like we're selling a lot of CDs in the pre-order, and I'm, and last time we were in Europe, like I brought a lot of vinyl thinking, yeah, everyone's going to want the vinyl of Thunderheart, and the Germans just wanted CDs. We sold out real quick. And then after Keep It True, our club shows, we didn't have any CDs left, and people were upset. They're like, I wanted the CD. I was like, oh man, I had no idea.
Yeah. It's interesting. Every time that different sources online seem to say, well, the CD is dead, and I'll see people comment, oh, I still collect them.
Yeah. People do. They collect them, and I think they sound the best. Like, you know, I love my vinyl. Don't get me wrong. One of my favorite things to do is while I work from home. So I basically put on a record, side A, side B, and just, I'll just let her rip. And I love doing that. But I do think that as far as like sound quality, that the CD is still the best quality format.
Okay. And you guys are obviously from the Seattle area. Yep. There have been many different waves of music that have come out from Seattle.
Certainly. Over the years.
Yeah. Is there any local influence that would surprise people that you think has influenced you or the band?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, obviously Queensryche is a big one for all of us. I mean, a lot of people don't realize that Queensryche is from Bellevue, which is not too far from Seattle. Right. We like a lot of the, there's a lot of classic underground metal bands here, like Q5, Rail, Fifth Angel, bands like really cool bands like that. And of course, Metal Church, also, you know, kind of from the area. We got to play a show with them a couple of years ago, on the Olympic Peninsula, and that was really cool for all of us because we're all huge Metal Church fans. But I don't know if there's any of us surprised. I mean, none of us are real big grunge heads, but you know, Sanctuary, of course, you know, they're from around here, I believe. So there's a rich history of melodic metal out here. Heir Apparent, another one. We've run into those cats every once in a while. So yeah, it's a very cool history. It's cool to still see a lot of those guys doing the thing out here, and it's fun to play shows with them once in a while.
Yeah, it's interesting that a lot of people forget that a lot of the bands that you mentioned are from the area. Totally. You know, when everything went down in the 90s, it was funny that people all of a sudden forgot that Queensryche was from Seattle, you know, or yeah, from the general area. And to me, it was always interesting. Well, this big band from, when some of the other bands were coming up, they were saying, well, the first big band from the area, and I don't know how long, since Heart. And I'm like, wait a second. You just had a band selling albums that's from the area. So,
yeah, I mean, Operation Mindcrime is such a side, like, you know, Empire was huge. Like, yeah. Silent Lucidity was a mainstream hit and all those. Like, that was a really big album for those guys. So, yeah, it is funny that people kind of forget that they're from around here. But we're lucky they are because they play – I don't love casino shows very much. That's the only tough thing. They play a lot around here, but it's a lot of times in a casino. And those shows are always a little weird. But, you know, I much prefer I did see them at the Neptune in town not too long ago. So that was pretty neat. But yeah, there's a lot of melodic metal and stuff that's come out of here over the years. It's pretty cool. And the old guard here are like super supportive. And they're really stoked on some of the new bands that are coming up. It's very neat.
Okay. The album officially drops on what day?
February 13th. It'll be dropping.
Okay. Where can people go to pick up the album and make sure that the most amount of money ends up back in the band's pockets?
Well, if you're in North America, you're going to want to head to our Bandcamp. We're going to get the biggest cut. And look out for things called Bandcamp Fridays, because when they do a Bandcamp Friday, Bandcamp doesn't take anything. I do actually believe that the 13th, when the album drops, is a Bandcamp Friday. But we are getting low on our stock. Like the pre-orders have been going really well, so some things are going low. Like the blue vinyl's already sold out. The cassette's already sold out. So if you want to get a CD or a black vinyl, the time is now. So you can head to our Bandcamp, greyhawkmetal.bandcamp.com, and you can secure your copy. If you're in Europe, you can find it there too. There's a link to order it from Europe, and we have distribution over in Europe. So don't worry, your fees for shipping are not going to be horrendous, because we have a distributor over there, and they're going to ship it to you at normal shipping costs. So don't be afraid to order it if you're in Europe right now. For my friends back in Canada, there's nothing I can do. It costs $1 million to ship stuff over the border. I'm really sorry. It costs $18 for me to ship a CD from Seattle to Vancouver. I don't know why. I'm not the post office and I'm not customs. I can't help you. I'm sorry. But yeah, Bandcamp is the spot, or you can head to Cruz del Sur's website too.
Okay. And where should people go to keep up with the band?
Oh, our Instagram, our Facebook, those are the two most current sites. The handle is Greyhawk Metal at each one. So if you just search Greyhawk Metal on social media, you'll find that. We're very responsive. Send us a message. Let us know what's going on. Check out our posts, comment, interact. We love talking to our fans. So please don't be shy.
Awesome. I want to thank you for your time today. It was awesome talking to you, and the album, for anyone who's remotely into any classic heavy metal or power metal, I definitely recommend it. So I do thank you for your time, Darren.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time as well.
All right. Cheers. Have a good one.
You too. Take care.
Subscribe to the show on all your favorite podcast platforms like Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon, and more. Go to signalsfrommars.com for more information. This concludes our show.